From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we move on into the Lenten season, approaching Holy Week very, very, very soon. And it looks like spring has finally sprung here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're glad to welcome in our good friend, Father Michael Kiernan. Father, good day to you.
Hello, Bob, and hello to everybody who's listening today. Beautiful day indeed, yeah.
Yes, indeed. And we're just coming off a big day, St. Patrick's Day, which did not fall.
Wow, that was a big day.
Did not fall on Friday during Lent. You didn't have to eat vegetarian corned beef.
Yes, yes.
You are a native of Ireland.
Indeed.
Is St. Patrick's Day, I don't know if it's a myth or not a myth or whatever. People say, oh, it's a much bigger day in the United States than it is in Ireland. Is that true?
You know, I was just at a dinner last night, and they were saying that there was a couple of people there from Ireland who were visiting, and they were precisely saying that there was somebody who visited Ireland for St. Patrick's Day a few years ago, and she said she was disappointed that it was such a quiet day, comparatively speaking, compared to here. And so we talked about all the excitement, especially college students and various places here. This year seems to be really a big deal.
Yeah, in the United States, of course, the huge parades, and especially in cities that have had historically a lot of Irish immigrants arrive there. New York, obviously, for one. But one of the biggest St. Pat's Day's parade I learned was in Savannah, Georgia, which struck me as odd.
Yeah, that is surprising because not a very strong Catholic presence there, at least until recently anyway. Yeah. And but of course, the one thing that unites peoples of all Christian faiths is that of Irish people, whether they're Catholic or Protestant, is a little nod to St. Patrick.
Yes, 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 indeed. Then Butte, Montana has a huge Catholic population, a lot of Irish Catholic population. A lot of people went out to work in the copper mines out there, and they have they have a big parade, and all the politicians give speeches, and you think Montana, you know, but it's Butte, Montana specifically, it's a big deal in Butte, Montana. So,
well, I wasn't aware of either of those, actually, Savannah or Butte, but that's very exciting. Yeah.
So, talk a little bit about St. Patrick. He sometimes moves almost into the realm of mythical, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, that's true, of course. Yeah, it's true of a lot of ancient people, you know, that there's always some additional tales added on to the reality. But obviously, we know when he was alive and when he was in Ireland as a slave and when he got away, and then he came back as a priest, bishop, and the enormous success that he had in that very short period of time in Ireland, and how he touched the people, and by the end of his life, actually, had made a lot of converts, yeah.
So he was Welsh, is that right?
Well, no one is sure about that exactly, but
he was
probably some part of Wales.
He was kidnapped, right? And taken to Ireland.
Yeah, the powers, the tribes there in Ireland were always rushing over to England or that part of the world and taking slaves and bringing them back. And he was one of them and spent a long time up in modern day Northern Ireland in the Antrim County, as it's upper county of Belfast, which is sort of the capital of modern-day Northern Ireland. And he was in there on the mountains, so he said, I prayed 100 times by day and twice as many times that at night. And wow. So he prayed, I guess he would say that an angel came to him to help him to find his way all the way down the eastern coast of Ireland through modern Dublin and down into Wexford County. Mm-hmm. And that would be a couple of hundred miles. And to get that distance, first of all, was a big undertaking, but cannot be noticed or captured or stand out or whatever. He made it to modern-day Wexford County and then back across the sea to his own land, and somehow was able to find his way around there again, having been gone from being a young child. And now he's back there, and he is a very strong Catholic man and loves the faith, and is now determined to become a priest. And the Pope actually was looking for somebody to reach out to Ireland at that particular time, which was totally pagan. And so he, the Pope actually sent a man from Italy, which was a waste of time, because poor man couldn't handle the climate, couldn't handle anything, and didn't live very long. And so that left the Pope desperate for, what do we do now? And so lo and behold, God provided Patrick, and Patrick had the faith, and he had the understanding of the Irish, and he heard the angel calling him to come back, or the Irish people calling him to come back and to bring the faith of Jesus Christ to them. And so, lo and behold, he did.
Wow. He was always Catholic. He's not a convert.
No, he would have been a Catholic from, you know, the British had been made, but not that long, actually, but they were there, and Pope had been able to get that done. And so Patrick is a good Catholic boy and brought his faith with him and never wavered, even in the midst of all the troubles and cold and miserable treatment that he got, I'm sure, as a slave minding sheep out there on the hills of Antrim, cold, nasty part of the world. And so he stayed with it, prayed, and God took care of him and then brought him back to to the land.
Was he that he had. Did the Pope name him a bishop or not?
Yeah, he made him bishop, and now he's able to do everything that is needed to get the church going. And he had a great person working with him, St. Bridget. Mm-hmm. So the patron saints of Ireland are St. Patrick and St. Bridget.
Now,
they were contemporaries.
Was she native of Ireland?
She was native, actually, so mm-hmm. she would have been converted by him. Mm-hmm. And then continued on doing the work, and she was down in close to modern day Dublin in Kildare mm-hmm. County. And so she has a great history herself, and in fact there's sort of a resurgence of interest in St. Bridget and what she did and how she did it, and for a very strong, dedicated woman. So between her and St. Patrick, they made this amazing success for the Lord. Story is told of St. Patrick that there was a king, basically King of Ireland as far as it was united at that time. But anyway, he was out in a place called Tara, T-A-R-A, in modern-day County Meath. And this king would always set this great fire at Easter, in spring. It wasn't Easter then, because they didn't know Easter. But the king was the only one who could light this great fire, of course, symbolizing his authority and power and all of that, and making sure that people realized who was in charge here. So Patrick knows this is coming up, and Patrick goes on another hill, sort of a lesser hill, but quite a high hill. And lo and behold, before the king can get his fire going, Patrick lights up a big fire. And the king is not amused. What is this? Who is this guy? What's going on here? And so he has Patrick brought into him, and Patrick explains that he is lighting the true light. Your light, king, is nice thing, okay, but humanly speaking, but I'm going to tell you about the light of Christ. And he may succeed. He didn't get killed. And, of course, there was all the pagan druids, as Druidism was a pagan faith at that time in Ireland, and Celtic faith and so on. So Patrick has to deal with all that. But amazing, he traveled around the country and had enormous success. There's all sorts of stories told about how different people try to kill him, which would make sense because he was actually disturbing the whole way of life of the people and changing it. And if you're a druid priest and all that, he's got to put you out of business.
Yeah, it seems
so. More, all sorts of challenges there. You know, people think often that when you come with a great message of love and peace and mercy and kindness and charity and all that, that everybody's going to be jumping up and down with joy. But as we saw in the scriptures in the early church, there were certain people who didn't think this was that good a thing at all.
Yeah.
I'm going to affect my lifestyle and how I've been doing things and my business and my ways of carrying out a life. So I'm going to get rid of those guys.
Yeah, it seems miraculous that he wasn't killed. Or at least imprisoned permanently.
Yeah, you know, he seemed to have great freedom to move around, and he wrote a lot. The famous book of Patrick is The Confessions of St. Patrick, is called. And he says that he wrote in rustic Latin. And so he wasn't a great Latin writer, sort of rough Latin, not very polished Latin like many other people would have, but it doesn't stop him putting out his message and the beautiful thoughts that he had, and you know, the commitment and all of that, and his Jesus, you know, who he was and the center of our life, and Christ be before me, Christ be behind me, Christ be above me, Christ be below me, all those, that beautiful statement of St. Patrick.
Wow, so I can't even imagine going back. Number one, it seems like that would be an enormous act of courage. But I don't know how would you start? Obviously, you'd have to arm yourself with the Lord and just say, guide me. I don't know how you would start to spread the good word. It's mind-boggling to me.
Well, of course, first of all, if he had the knowledge of the people, so he would have known the country and the climate and the ways of the people to some extent. I mean, it would be not the same all over the island of Ireland, but more or less somewhat similar. And so he knew that. And then he had the authority of the Pope behind him, who was telling him, I've been wanting to get somebody over there for a long time to get this done and bring the people the message of Christianity. And then, of course, he had this call of the people in his dreams. He got this call, Patrick, come back to us. Patrick, come back to us. And so he obviously took that as rightly a message from God that you need to do this. And so everything was pointing in the right direction for him. And if you know that God is with you, well, that gives you a good start.
That would be, I don't think you'd want to try it without God on your side.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
But if you feel
sure.
that God is with you, and you know God is with you, and the Pope has told you that he's with you too, and he wants you to do this, then I suppose the only answer is yes, got to go do it.
Yeah. So this is, we're talking about the 5th century, somewhere in there?
Yeah. Fourth, fifth century, yeah. And so early Christianity wouldn't be that long from the time of Constantine and the freeing, as it were, of Christians in modern-day Europe, and the spreading of Christianity to modern-day England, Wales, and so on. And so the Pope is now sort of established. The Pope was always established, but now he's free, and the Church is free to evangelize and reach out. And so Patrick would have a good insight into the faith, and then the encouragement and even the command of the Pope to go to Ireland and preach just the dream. So off we go.
So the was he ever formally canonized?
Well, I don't know about that, in the sense that, you know, to a great extent, most of the saints that we have in the early centuries were never gone through a process like we have today.
Right.
When your time comes, Bob, that you're being canonized, there'll be a very big process, and all of us will have to give testimony about you and tell all the wonderful holy things you did.
I think it'll be a long process.
But back then, it was more like... Maybe, but back then it was sort of a the people of a community, and we get that a little bit sometimes in our own society, you know, where you or I might say such a priest or such a layperson, for that matter, is a little saint.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
Gosh, that woman is just so good.
Yep.
I think she's a saint, and people, when somebody dies, people will come out in great numbers for their funeral. And so, in a sense, you almost become, in that case, and even with the modern-day push, you know, on the process that we have, the person must have had something very special about them for to get the process going.
Yeah.
But back then, it was more by acclamation, and the people then would just rejoice in Patrick and, well, what he did, and of course, right away, then the success of his work made it clear that he was a holy man, and so on. So, they have a little saying that in Ireland that Saint Patrick was a decent man who came from decent people. In every town, he built a church, and on it put a steeple. So Patrick would have all sorts of the stories around him, and people obviously rejoiced in him and took to him like a fish to water.
Yeah. Wow. So the Anglican Church, the Church of Ireland, they venerate him as well?
Yeah, but of course nearly all the non-Catholic churches don't put the same emphasis on saints as we would in calling saints, but they'd probably refer to him as St. Patrick, but probably a lot of people would see him almost like we would see Washington, you know, as the father of our country and going back to establishing who we are to some extent. And so the same with Patrick would be given that pride of place that he was the beginning, and without him, it would not have... taking place.
So during your youth and when you were in seminary and just growing up in Ireland, how was St. Patrick's Day regarded?
Well, of course, it would always be Mass, and then there would be parades in various, in the big cities for sure, but even the smaller towns would have a Mass, of course, and then there would be some sports events and various other occasions celebrating. Though actually the food that we have here, the corned beef and cabbage, was not as much over there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a day of celebration and appreciation for Patrick. And of course, what people maybe don't always realize is that if you were to look at the influence of individual people throughout the centuries. I suppose you could speak of Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, and many people like that. Obviously Washington in our time, Lincoln and so on. But I think if you were to see that out of St. Patrick, you know, came, well, it's almost impossible to define what was achieved from what he did then, because it wasn't that many years later, a couple of centuries, that the faith was basically wiped out in Europe, and the Irish monks were left alone, and they actually were able to go to Europe, to all sorts of parts of Europe, restoring the faith down as far as Italy itself and the great community there of Bobbio in Italy. And so then you have that. And then, of course, later on, the influence of the Irish church throughout the world, not only in the United States, but in the Philippines and Australia and so on. Even like in South America, in Africa, of course, you know, the Holy Spirit Fathers, the White Fathers, as they were called. And they brought the church to, they brought Catholic faith to. So again, it was, you know, the amount of Catholic vocations, priest vocations. Well, look at our own diocese here, Sacramento. I mean, for many years, it was totally served by Irish priests.
Right.
And you could say the same for much of the country here. So in that sense, if you just look at the whole thing originating from St. Patrick, had he not gone back, well, would Ireland ever have been converted? And therefore, all this huge outfall would not have come.
Yeah.
So God's providence was certainly powerful there.
Yeah. And there's a major shrine to him in Armagh?
Oh, yeah, indeed, yeah.
And that's in Northern Ireland.
So he was in, yes. So he was actually, there's a famous city in, County in Down County, D-O-W-N, Down County, one of the counties in modern Northern Ireland, and they have Down Patrick. So that was the county somehow that he seemed to get started in, and even though he had been up in the mountains of Antrim, which is not far away, an adjoining county, but somehow he got back there and he moved from there. That was his original place, and he's buried up there, yeah.
Oh, he is buried there. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so, and what's the deal with St. Patrick and snakes?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, I'm not very much familiar with that myself, but St. Patrick is considered to have so much power over everything, and there's the famous story told that we mentioned earlier. There were many attempts on his life. Yeah. And, of course, the stories are embellished a little bit. But anyway, some people tried to kill Patrick. And so they cooked a meal for him and had it poisoned. And as soon as Patrick said the blessing, the animal that had been cooked jumps up off the table. And so that took care of the poisoning and didn't look good for those who were trying to do it. But that may be a little bit of an embellishment, but I would say that it's not, it would be very surprising if many people didn't try to kill him. So maybe that has something to do with the snakes as well. You know, there's also that saying that we use today, the snake in the grass.
Right, right.
Well, they've got a lot of wit in Ireland, and wordsmiths, they love words and right, how to put things and so on. And so they'll, sometimes people will say, well, St. Patrick got rid of all the crawling snakes in Ireland.
Uh-huh.
I wish he got rid of the two-legged ones.
Yes.
Because there are lots of them still around, yeah, depending on your point of view, I suppose. So anyway, Patrick and the snakes, yeah.
So is St. Patrick's Day, I read this somewhere, is St. Patrick's Day a holy day of obligation in Ireland?
Yes, it is.
A solemnity?
Yes, it's an optional one here. But you see that in some parts of the world with different saints, you know, where somebody will be in a solemnity in one country, but not honored in the same way in faraway countries. You could imagine people like in, you know, South America or many other places. But most people have heard of St. Patrick.
Oh, yeah, they have.
Even in faraway places.
Yeah, like Sacramento.
Yes. And, of course, he's our patron saint here.
Right.
St. Patrick. Right. And a beautiful statue of him in the cathedral.
Wasn't our first bishop named Patrick?
Yes, Patrick Minogue, the great builder of the cathedral. And we've had many priests, of course. And obviously, Bishop Soto devoted a window in the cathedral to the Irish priests for their contribution. You can see that anytime you go to the cathedral, there in the back. And so the contribution was enormous, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's. I mean, when I was growing up in this diocese, Irish priest was, that was redundant.
Yes.
Everybody was an Irish priest.
Yes. I'm sure people had a hard time figuring that the guys who weren't Irish, are they for real?
It's like, we had.
They don't speak the same as I always grew up with.
You had to have that Irish brogue to be a priest.
Yeah, where did that American accent come from? Is this guy for real?
No, that's actually very true. And my first priest, when we moved to California on my fifth birthday, believe it or not, and my first priest was Father Degnan at St. James in Davis. Paul, I think his name was Paul. There was a Father Gabriel. I don't remember him being there very long. And then, of course, for many decades, Monsignor Coffey was there, and also clearly a native of Ireland. And I remember one day Cardinal Fee, I believe it was, visited Davis because. Mm-hmm. Because he certainly knew of Monsignor Coffey, and I was my two oldest kids were attending St. James Elementary School. We didn't have one when I was growing up, but this would have been in the 70s or 80s, something like that. And I'm pulling into the parking lot at the school at St. James to pick up my kids, and there's Monsignor Coffey talking to this very, obviously very important man, and he sees me get out of the car, or Father does, Father Coffey, and he waves me over, and he says, Bob, you have to meet Cardinal Fee. And so I met a cardinal in the parking lot at the elementary school.
Well, you know, there's an interesting story on that, in that when Cardinal Fee came to stay there at the rectory with Monsignor Coffey, he was considered and is considered a cardinal, is considered a prince of the church, which, and of course, there was also the troubles going on in Ireland, and he was from Northern Ireland, Cardinal Fee. So he was staying there, and three or four Irish priests who knew him decided to go over and visit, 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, and they're walking in there like they would have walked into that rectory 1,000 times. And lo and behold, as they're about to get to the door, these fellas jump up out of the bushes and say, stop, and show that they're Secret Service.
Whoa.
And they were protecting the cardinal, and so they weren't going to let anybody. So they had to check inside, and finally Monsignor Coffey came out and said, yeah, these are all Irish priests here, and they're fine, and you can let them in, and so on, so on. But then, of course, they did. But so that was a humorous thing of being held up. And I do remember when Cardinal Fee came he had a mass at the cathedral,
mm-hmm.
and it was sort of hilarious because the Secret Service are there, and there's all these Irish nuns who are running up to grab him and hug him, and you know they'd known him.
Sure.
And of course, they say hello to a cardinal and greet him. And the Secret Service, you could see, were awful nervous, you know, because there was just too many of these people running up, and there was nothing you could do about it. Dear. You know, and of course, B is saying, you know, the cardinal is saying, you know, hello, Sister Mary, how are you? Hello, Sister Joan, how are you? How are you? How is your mother doing? And so on and so on. And so the Secret Service are looking on in amazement.
That's I didn't know that story at all. I didn't even know he was staying at the rectory. And, I might have had an encounter with the Secret Service myself. I'd have probably gone and knocked on the door and said, well, I'm a reporter from the local paper. I need to know what's going on here.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's a great story. You know, it's funny. Yeah. My youngest son, his best friend in high school is same age. They're both 19, named Declan Fee. And every time I see Declan, I think of Cardinal Fee, you know. And
yes.
Obviously an Irish Catholic family, and that name, it just always has stuck with me. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. It is a great name in Ireland, yeah.
Yeah. So we're with Father Michael Kiernan. Father, we're just a couple of days away from what I just think is one of the most special masses and gatherings, the Chrism Mass. Talk about the importance of that mass. Thursday, 6 p.m. at the cathedral. And
it's a beautiful day. And
everyone's invited.
Everybody's invited and everybody comes. It'll be a very big gathering of people. And it's also Chrism Day is a special day for priests because the bishop always puts on a sort of a day of a prayer for us. And so we'll be having that. I think it's going to be at St. Anthony's from about 9 or 10 in the morning until the afternoon. Then there's a late lunch or early dinner, whatever you call it. And so that's there at the cathedral lower level. Mercy Hall, and then at 6 o'clock, all the priests process in, and all the people are there, and the deacons are there, and everybody and their mother is there.
It's quite a scene.
Then we have all the beautiful readings, quite a scene to see all the priests process in, and of course the music is exciting and beautiful and holy, and big choir and all that. And then we have the blessing of the oils. We have the renewal of priests and their vows, priestly vows and so on, to the bishop. And a great homily by the bishop is always on that night of washing of the feet. And then there's all of that beautiful thing. We don't do the actual washing of the feet there, but we do have it on Holy Thursday, of course.
Right. So, this is the Thursday prior to Holy Thursday because of our diocese being huge that we need to do it not on Holy Thursday.
Yeah, so there's certain elements that would be on Holy Thursday if you could, in a sense, but because, as you say, we have to do it the other day. But some dioceses do it like even a couple of weeks before,
mm-hmm.
or on a Tuesday or whatever. But we've always done it on the Thursday before, and then the beautiful occasion. And then the priests pick up the oils there that the bishop has just blessed. And so there's great work by staff to get the oils into their containers. And so everybody picks up all the pastor will pick up for his own parish and bring that home. And then the old oil is disposed of from last year's oil. And now the new oil is put into the containers back in the parishes, and the priests put them into their containers for the anointing of the sick. And so then from the rest of the next year, those oils blessed by Bishop Soto now will be used for the anointing of the sick throughout the diocese.
It's such a unifying event, Mass, to think that the oils that are going all the way to Wairika and Rio Vista and Vallejo and South Tahoe and Alturas, they're all being blessed there at the cathedral and then distributed and then going out to the four corners of the diocese.
Yes, it is that, and it's there's so many symbolic pieces to it, and you know, just a blessing in the three big containers and all the three great oils and so on, and then that those will be used for ordinations and you know, blessing of a new church or anything else that the bishop uses oil for. So it's a great experience of church, and I'd encourage anybody who can make it to come out. It's not that long a mass. I think it starts at 6, and I'm sure it's done by 8.
Yeah, it starts at 6 o'clock. Yep. And
yeah.
At the cathedral. And again, everybody's invited. It's March 21, this Thursday. And as I understand it, the oil is raised right here in the Diocese of Sacramento, the work of human hands.
Well, indeed, that's a very beautiful thing. And part of our whole Catholic faith is, you know, that the very oils, like the bread and the wine that we use in the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, and all of those are indeed, as you say, the work of human hands, and that God has involved us in all of these things and used the things he has given us to be transformed into sacred oils and obviously the bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ.
Yeah, and then, of course, we move into Holy Week.
Oh, yes. The great occasion, yeah.
Talk about Holy Thursday. That too, growing up in Ireland, if you would, what Holy Week was like.
Well, again, of course, everybody went. Not everybody went on Holy Thursday, just like here. And in the early times, you know, the celebration, we didn't have the great Holy Saturday Mass like we have now. It was actually, a lot of it was done on the Saturday morning, quietly, as it were, without involving much of the people. So, but the big occasion then, of course, would be Good Friday, when people came out in great droves. And I remember we'd be working in the fields, and then everybody would knock off around 2 o'clock, go home and get into the house and wash up and get dressed up and off to church at 3 o'clock. And that was a great occasion of jam-full church. I remember that well, yeah.
Wow. And obviously, I guess a priest could tell you, do we have more attendance on Easter Sunday, or do we have more attendance on Christmas Day?
I'd say it's pretty much even. It's huge both times.
Yeah.
I think with the midnight mass, you know, more people come to that. But certainly Easter masses will be jam full every place.
Yeah.
And people come in great numbers, yeah.
If we finally put COVID in the rearview mirror, and our churches seemed, I was overwhelmed with the attendance on Ash Wednesday. You know, not a holy day of obligation. That shouldn't be what makes you go to Mass or go to church, go for the ashes. But, and it was so nice. On the way out, we were handed ashes just in case, you know, in a little container, just in case a family member or a friend hadn't been able to go to Mass.
That's a beautiful thing. I hadn't heard that much, but
that's a good idea. It had never happened to me before, and they announced it and said, if you need ashes, and indeed we had a family member who was just very happy about that.
And that's a great idea, because I know here at Beale on Ash Wednesday, I had a guy come who kept his distance from me, but wanted to get ashes for himself and his family, who were all indisposed at home, and he wanted to come and get the ashes for them and for himself. So we took care of that and then got him on his way with a little ashes for his family, yeah?
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Good thinking by the pastor there, yeah?
Yeah, very good, very good. And we happened to go at noontime, and it was just overwhelming, you know, even on the fact that it was Valentine's Day. You know,
yes, it was very special this year. Yeah,
yeah, it was. People kind of chuckled or something, and I said, "No, this is a double treat, if you will. I mean, what could be more about love and caring and all that than Ash Wednesday and the beginning of Lent and what Jesus did for all of us, for all of our souls."
Well, it was wonderful, and here we are coming to the end of the Lenten time, and then those, what's called the Great Triduum, the mm-hmm. Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Holy Saturday, and Easter Sunday. And it's interesting, you know, that the Mass that starts on Holy Thursday, there's no Mass on Good Friday ever.
Right.
And then it carries right through until the great Mass of the resurrection on a Holy Saturday night, and the blessing of the oil, the blessing of the new people coming into the church,
right?
Baptisms, confirmations, profession of faith. It's a pity that more people don't come to that, because it's a very moving, wonderful occasion. And
it really
and
is.
If you went to the cathedral on that night with Bishop Soto, I think it would be better than any movie you could ever go to.
But that's so well said. The times I've been, it's so emotional to see these people who willingly chose to come into the faith. You know, I'm a cradle Catholic, and it's an experience I never had. And although I did give permission, I was baptized the day I was born, and I remember giving consent. But my mother was a convert. And wow, I mean, to see her at a Mass like that and seeing these people who went through what she went through, wow, you know, she converted as a young adult after attending a Catholic nursing school. That's where she got her nursing degree, in Bismarck, North Dakota, the University of Mary, St. Alexis.
Wow.
And she said the nuns, they didn't try to convert me, but they did. Just by accident, by the way they lived their lives and by the way they treated people. And she said that they had something I really wanted. And she was Lutheran at the time, which I'm pretty sure is state law in North Dakota. by golly, she converted.
Wow, isn't that something? I mean, you're just as you're saying that, I'm reminded of the situation of Elizabeth Ann Seton, where she was in Italy, and she was observing this the procession, a Holy Eucharist procession on Holy Thursday, and all these people are there, and she wasn't Catholic at the time, and this other sort of wealthy woman with her said to Elizabeth Ann Seton, "You know, well, you look at all those people there. Those poor peasants, you know, they think that Jesus is truly present there in that bread."
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth Ann Seton said to herself, "I do too." And so that was almost a big step forward in her becoming a convert and eventually becoming the great saint that she is. So she understood that the people were right. All these people that the other lady was laughing at, but she realized the truth of what they knew.
Yeah, what was put in her heart. Yeah, indeed. Father,
yeah.
The clock is ticked on us. You always, almost always, when we conclude, you always have on these special days a prayer or a blessing.
Well, I thought what I would do in view of our conversation, St. Patrick, to read the beautiful prayer that we say on that day in church.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
So that, I think, will be a good way to finish. So let us pray. O God, who chose the Bishop St. Patrick to preach your gospel to the peoples of Ireland, grant through his merits and intercession that those who glory in the name of Christian may never cease to proclaim your wondrous deeds to all, through Christ our Lord.
Amen. Father, blessings to you and everybody you come in touch with, especially up there at Beale and the cathedral and everywhere else. And we'll look forward to our paths crossing again real soon.
Yeah, we'll have a beautiful time at Beale. And then I know I have the 4 o'clock English and the 6 o'clock Spanish on Easter Sunday at the cathedral. So looking forward to a beautiful time. We do have confessions on the cathedral from 3 to 5 on Holy Saturday. Just talking to the rector about that the other day. So look forward to a wonderful, blessed time. And God bless everybody who hears the show.
Thank you so much, Father. That's Father Michael Kiernan, and he's a chaplain up at Beale Air Force Base, as well as all his duties here in the Diocese of Sacramento as well. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. I want to take a minute to talk about the annual Catholic Appeal, the 2024 annual Catholic Appeal. So important here in the Diocese of Sacramento. So many ministries supported by the annual Catholic Appeal, and the people in the Diocese of Sacramento have always been so generous. But a wonderful brochure, a pamphlet, really, that you may have received in the mail, and on the back cover a picture, maybe it's front, I guess that's the front cover, Deacon Kevin Staskow says, I really think that everyone has something to give. When Jesus was literally dying on the cross, he found the strength to turn to the thief being crucified next to him and minister to that person. So often we have all kinds of excuses not to reach out to those next to us. Indeed, today you will be with me in paradise. And you look through this brochure, and you will learn the many, many, many ministries that are supported by the annual Catholic Appeal. And 25% of your donation goes back to the parishes for social ministry at your parish. 50% supports charities, Catholic Charities of Sacramento, and the members in that are Catholic Charities of Yolo Solano, Northern Valley Catholic Social Service, which serves Butte, Glen, Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties in this 20-county diocese, and Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services right here in the greater Sacramento area. Also, associate members are Camp Recreation, serving Northern California, the Mother Teresa Maternity Home in Placerville, the Rancho Cordova Food Locker in greater Sacramento, the Upper Room Dining Hall in Placerville. Many of you who have worked at those places, are very familiar with those places, or have availed yourself of the wonderful services they provide. 25% supports education, seminary formation, and Catholic school tuition assistance. Partners in the annual Catholic Appeal and Catholic Charities of Sacramento include Anderson Cottonwood Christian Assistance, Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home right here in Sacramento that does such wonderful work, the Catholic Ladies Relief Society up in Chico, Community Assistance Network in Greenville, Portola, and Quincy up in the hills, Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento, which just does wonderful work with the homeless, Sacramento Life Center, which has saved so many lives here in the Sacramento area, Salvation Army Food Shelf in Susanville, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul and their seven district councils, the North State, Placer, Yuba, Sutter, Butte, Sacramento East, South Sacramento, Elk Grove, Sacramento Metro Area, and Yolo Delta and Solano. Also, the Stanford Settlement Neighborhood Center in Sacramento and the Wellsprings Women's Center in Sacramento, plus Yuba City, Yuba Sutter, Right to Life, the two counties just north of Sacramento. More than 100 programs provide things like counseling, emergency fund, shelter and clothing, permanent and transitional housing, job training, pregnancy counseling, post and prenatal care, independent living skills, mentoring, parenting skills, after school care, refugee resettlement, citizenship and immigration services, and jail ministry. Our gifts help people who are mentally ill, homeless, disaster survivors, immigrants, elderly, developmentally disabled, incarcerated, working families, refugees, at-risk youth, the unborn, pregnant women, the hungry, and single parents. Such a wide, wide range of our Catholic mission here on this earth and in this diocese of Sacramento. One of the programs through Northern Valley Catholic Social Services is the court-appointed special advocate program, which is operated out of all the superior courts in the state of California, and it partners with Northern Valley Catholic Social Service to help kids who need advocates in the courts. They talk about, in this pamphlet, a young woman named Isabel, who is devoted to ensuring a positive support system for foster kids now and for their future. As a court-appointed special advocate, a program administered with compassion and dedication by Northern Valley Catholic Social Service, Isabel gives kids the voice they need in court to have a positive path in life. She was once in foster care herself. The severe trauma a child goes through is all too familiar. Today, she's reunited with her parents, has a family of her own, and is focused on becoming a lawyer. Northern Valley Catholic Social Services gives her the opportunity to advocate in court for children with stories like hers. Again, the annual Catholic Appeal, give generously, give whatever you can, whether it's a small amount, a large amount. Also, more men can say yes to the call to the priesthood. Support from the annual Catholic Appeal helps seminarian Eric Patrick, who is pictured in this brochure, to become Father Eric Patrick this past June. We've had him on our program, a delightful priest. Father Patrick is earnestly hopeful that he can be a conduit for the experience of God's mercy and love. With costs offset by the appeal, the 12 men now in seminarian formation can focus less on financial worries and more on preparing to serve in our parishes. The annual Catholic Appeal, a wonderful, wonderful way to support so many ministries in the Diocese of Sacramento. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of America, Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Empty hands held high, such small sacrifice. If not joined with my life, I sing in vain tonight. May the words I say